sleep at time facts. Mathematics, the quiet language of numbers as you settle into your bed. Allow your body to become heavy and soft against the mattress. Close your eyes and take a slow, deep breath, letting the air fill your lungs before gently releasing it. There is a profound stillness to mathematics that is perfect for the weary mind. Before we explore specific concepts, simply acknowledge the presence of order. Numbers are the quiet scaffolding of the universe, existing silently in the symmetry of a leaf and the steady rhythm of the tides. They do not demand attention or energy. They simply exist. In a world that can sometimes feel unpredictable, the fundamental rules of numbers remain constant and true. This stability offers a gentle anchor for your thoughts. There is nothing to solve right now, only a peaceful structure to observe. Let this sense of enduring order wrap around you like a warm, weighted blanket as you breathe out. Let go of the day's variables and rest in the calm certainty of this silent, universal language. The invention of zero in the vast landscape of numbers, there exists a concept that signifies both nothing and everything. It is a figure that holds a unique place in history, representing the absence of quantity, while simultaneously giving structure to the entire system of mathematics. This is the story of the number zero, a concept that seems intuitive to the modern mind, but was, for thousands of years, a profound mystery to humanity. To understand the invention of zero, one must look back to a time when counting was strictly a matter of tangible objects. Early civilizations tallied baskets of grain, herds of cattle, or the phases of the moon. In this concrete world, numbers were used to describe what was present. One could hold a single stone, or two, or three. If there were no stones, there was simply nothing to count, and therefore, no need for a number to describe it. The void was merely a background against which existence was measured. The first stirrings of zero appeared not as a number with its own value, but as a form of punctuation. In the ancient Fertile Crescent, Babylonian astronomers and mathematicians developed a sophisticated system of calculation using cuneiform script pressed into wet clay tablets. Their number system was positional, relying on the placement of symbols to determine their value, much like we distinguish between the numbers 10 and 100 today. However, they initially lacked a symbol to indicate an empty column. Without a marker for emptiness, a scribe might struggle to differentiate between a simple unit and a much larger value, relying only on the context of the calculation. To solve this, the Babylonians began to use a pair of angled wedges to mark a gap. This symbol acted as a placeholder, a visual breath of silence amidst the data. It told the reader that a specific place in the number sequence was empty, yet this wedge was not yet zero in the way we understand it. It was functional and passive, a way to keep the other numbers in their proper rows, much like a space between words in a sentence. true transformation of zero from a mere placeholder into a number in its own right occurred in the rich intellectual traditions of ancient India. Here, the cultural and philosophical atmosphere was uniquely receptive to the idea of the void. In Indian philosophy, the concept of nothingness was not feared or avoided, rather, it was contemplated as a state of potential and balance. This philosophical foundation paved the way for a mathematical breakthrough. Scholars began to use the Sanskrit word shunya to describe this mathematical void. Shunya translates to empty or void, referring to a hollowness that is not lacking, but rather spacious. It was in this environment that the empty space found its identity. In the 7th century, the mathematician Brahmagupta formalized the rules for this new number. He wrote texts that treated zero not just as a gap to be filled or a space to be skipped, but as a valid quantity that could be used in arithmetic. Brahmagupta defined zero as the result obtained when a number is subtracted from itself. This simple definition was revolutionary. It established that nothingness was a defined point on the number line, a neutral anchor between the positive and the negative. Under this new system, zero became a partner in calculation. It could be added to other numbers, leaving them unchanged, preserving their identity with a quiet stability. Along with the mathematical definition came the evolution of the symbol. Initially represented as a small dot, known as a bindu, the notation gradually evolved into the open circle we recognize today. The circle is a fitting representation for the concept of shunya. It is a shape with no beginning and no end, a continuous loop that encloses an empty space. The gentle curve of the zero protects the void inside, defining a boundary around nothingness and giving it form. This invention fundamentally changed the nature of calculation. By treating zero as a number, mathematics gained a newfound elegance and power. The circle allowed for the effortless representation of vastly large numbers, holding the places of tens, hundreds, and thousands with silent precision. It turned the void into a building block, allowing algebra to flourish. The journey of zero is a testament to the human capacity to conceptualize the abstract. It required a leap of imagination to look at an empty space and see not just an absence, but a value. From the wedge in the Babylonian clay to the philosophical shunya of India, the invention of zero was a slow, quiet realization that emptiness is as essential as substance. It remains the quietest number, a loop of silence that holds the weight of the mathematical world in perfect balance. Parts of the whole, the story of fractions in the landscape of numbers, the integer stands as a pillar of solidity. It represents the complete, the unbroken, and the singular. One stone, one basket, one field. But the natural world is rarely so absolute in its quantities. To describe the reality of a harvest, the span of a season, or the division of a loaf, mathematics had to expand beyond the rigid counting of whole items. It had to develop a language for the spaces in between. This is the realm of fractions, the mathematical art of describing parts of a whole. The concept of the fraction arose from the fundamental human need to share and to measure. In the ancient world, the rhythm of daily life was dictated by the distribution of resources. When a harvest of grain was brought in from the fields, it had to be portioned out. If three families needed to share two large sacks of wheat, the integer alone could not provide a solution. The answer lay in breaking the unity of the one into smaller, equal segments. This act of division was not destructive, rather, it was a method of creating balance and equity. The earliest and most profound development of this system occurred along the banks of the Nile. For the ancient Egyptians, fractions were not merely abstract numbers, but essential tools for maintaining order in a complex society. Their civilization relied heavily on the predictable yet shifting nature of the river. When the Nile flooded each year, it deposited rich soil, but also erased the boundary markers of farm fields. When the waters receded, surveyors known as rope stretchers would venture out to redraw the lines of the land, because the land did not always divide perfectly into whole numbers of cubits. These surveyors relied on fractions to describe the partial measurements. They conceptualized these parts in a specific way, primarily using what are now called unit fractions. A unit fraction is a slice where the numerator, the top number, is always one. They spoke of one half, one third, or one tenth. To the Egyptian mathematician, a more complex quantity like three quarters was not viewed as a single entity, but rather as the sum of one half and one quarter. This additive approach created a sense of accumulation where smaller slivers were gathered together to build up to a desired amount. This reverence for the unit fraction is preserved in the Rhind Mathematical Papyrus, a scroll dating back nearly 4,000 years. In this document, the scribe Ahmes carefully recorded tables of numbers to help others calculate these divisions. The tone of the text is calm and instructional, intended to guide the reader through the correct accounting of bushels of grain and loaves of bread. It reflects a society where mathematics was a stabilizing force, a way to ensure that every portion was accounted for and every worker received their due. The notation we recognize today, with one number resting atop another, evolved much later, but the vocabulary of fractions reveals their tactile origins. The word itself comes from the Latin fractio, implying a breaking or a piece broken off. The bottom number, the denominator, acts as the namer. It tells us the denomination or the size of the piece. It defines the nature of the slice, whether the whole has been parted into two broad halves or 100 tiny slivers. The top number, the numerator, is the counter. It enumerates how many of those specific pieces are present. There is a quiet harmony in the rules that govern these numbers. To join two fractions together, They must speak the same language. One cannot simply press a third and a fourth together and expect a coherent result. They are different sizes, different denominations to combine them. Mathematics requires the finding of a common denominator, a shared standard that allows disparate parts to relate to one another. It is a process of translation, converting the thirds and fourths into twelfths, a size they both understand. Once this common ground is established, the parts can be added smoothly, creating a new, unified total. Other civilizations approached the partitioning of the whole with different but equally structured methods. The Romans, a pragmatic people focused on trade and construction, avoided the complexity of changing denominators. Instead, they preferred to subdivide everything into twelfths. This system, based on the number 12, was incredibly stable because 12 can be easily divided by 2, 3, 4, and 6. This preference for base 12 persists in the modern world, echoing in the 12 inches of a foot or the 12 hours of a clock face. It was a system designed for the marketplace and the scale, ensuring that weights and measures remained consistent and divisible. Whether through the unit fractions of the Nile Valley or the 12-part measures of Rome, the story of fractions is one of seeking precision within the whole. It is the mathematical acknowledgement that there is value between the integers. By defining the half, the quarter, and the twelfth, humanity found a way to describe the gradual and granular nature of the world. It allows for the fair division of a circle, the precise weighing of a precious metal, and the accurate mapping of a field. It turns the jagged remnants of the real world into a smooth, calculable order, proving that even when a whole is taken apart, the pieces retain their logic, their value, and their ability to be made whole again. The precision of decimals in the vast and orderly landscape of mathematics, the number system we use most frequently, is built upon the number 10. This base 10 structure, or the decimal system, provides a soothing rhythm to the way we count and measure the world. We are accustomed to the whole numbers, the solid integers that allow us to count objects one by one. However, the spaces between these whole numbers are not empty voids. They are filled with a continuous, smooth progression of values. To navigate these spaces with grace and accuracy, we rely on the precision of decimals. The word decimal comes from the Latin word decimus, meaning tenth. This etymology reveals the fundamental nature of the system. Just as the columns to the left of a number represent increasing powers of ten ones, tens, hundreds, and thousands, the columns to the right represent decreasing powers of 10. It is a mirror image of magnitude, descending gently into smaller and smaller refinements. There is a quiet elegance in this symmetry. When we move one step to the right, we are simply dividing by 10. We move from tenths to hundredths, then to thousandths, and onward to 10,000ths. Each step a precise subdivision of the one before it. The gateway to this realm of fine detail is the decimal point. This small, unobtrusive mark serves as a fixed anchor. It distinguishes the whole from the part, the integer from the fraction. Before the widespread adoption of this system, representing values less than one was a more cumbersome affair, often requiring complex notations that varied from region to region. The decimal point standardized this process, allowing for a linear flow of digits that is easy to read and easy to comprehend. Whether represented as a dot on the baseline or a comma, as is common in many parts of the world, its function remains the same: to mark the transition into greater precision. The history of this notation takes us back to the late 16th century and the work of a Flemish mathematician and engineer named Simon Stevin. In 1585, Stevin published a small but influential pamphlet titled De Theend, or the Tenth. In this work, he introduced a method for representing numbers using the decimal system, advocating for its use in all manner of accounts and measurements. Stevin understood that a consistent system based on tens would simplify the work of merchants, surveyors, and astronomers. His vision was one of clarity. He sought to remove the friction from calculation, allowing numbers to flow smoothly across the page. While his original notation was slightly more complex than the simple dot we use today, the underlying concept was perfectly sound and laid the groundwork for modern arithmetic. One of the most calming aspects of the decimal system is its ability to represent continuity. Imagine a number line stretching out horizontally. The whole numbers are evenly spaced markers along this line. Decimals allow us to zoom in on any segment of that line with infinite capability. If we look at the space between 0 and 1, we can place a marker exactly in the middle at 0. 5. If we wish to be more specific, we can divide that space again, locating 0. 25 or 0. 75. There is no gap that cannot be addressed. We can add more decimal places to describe a value with as much exactitude as necessary, peeling back layers of magnitude to reveal the specific location of a number. This system also brings a sense of order to the operations of addition and subtraction. Because decimals extend the base 10 logic, we can align numbers vertically by their decimal points, ensuring that tenths line up with tenths and hundredths with hundredths. It is a visual organization that creates neat, vertical columns. There is no need to find common denominators or convert values into different forms. We simply follow the columns down, carrying over values when they reach 10, just as we do with whole numbers. The consistency of the rules provides a stable framework for understanding quantities. There is a particular satisfaction in working with terminating decimals, numbers that resolve completely after a few places. A quarter becomes 0, 25, an eighth becomes 0, 125. These numbers settle quietly into their places, defined and complete. Even when a decimal extends further, it does so with a predictable hierarchy. The digit in the tenths place always holds more weight than the digit in the hundredths place. This descending order of significance means that we can often understand the approximate size of a number just by glancing at the first few digits after the point. Ultimately, the decimal system is a triumph of positional notation. It allows us to express the very large and the very small using the same 10 symbols, 0 through 9. It turns the concept of a part into a streamlined extension of the whole through the work of thinkers like Simon Stevin and the evolution of the decimal point. We have inherited a mathematical language that is both powerful and serene. It offers a way to describe the nuance of the world, dividing units into tenths, hundredths, and beyond, ensuring that every value has its proper place in the long, continuous line of numbers. The boundary of division by zero in the vast and orderly landscape of mathematics, most operations flow with a predictable rhythm. We add numbers to build larger sums, and we subtract them to find the quiet remainder. Multiplication expands values into vast fields, while division serves as the gentle inverse, neatly partitioning quantities into equal shares. However, within this harmonious system, there exists a singular, silent boundary where the usual rules softly come to a halt. This is the boundary found when one attempts to divide a number by zero. To understand this quiet limit, it is helpful to first consider the nature of division itself. At its heart, division is an act of sharing or splitting. If one takes a group of 12 smooth stones and divides them into 4 equal piles, the logic is clear and satisfying. Each pile receives 3 stones. This operation is firmly rooted in the physical world, easily visualized and verified. The process relies on the steady relationship between division and multiplication. These two operations are inextricably linked, functioning as mirror images of one another. When we say that 12 divided by 4 equals 3, we are simultaneously confirming that 3 multiplied by 4 returns us to the original 12. This backward check provides a sense of balance and completion to the calculation. The tranquility of this system relies on this reciprocal relationship. Every division problem asks a question that multiplication must be able to answer. If we ask how many times 2 fits into 10, the answer is 5. Because 5 groups of 2 perfectly reconstruct the 10. The logic flows in a continuous circle, unbroken and precise. But when we introduce 0 as the divisor, the circle cannot close. Imagine attempting to divide the number 10 by 0. In the language of multiplication, this poses a specific query. What number, when multiplied by 0, will equal 10? Here, the fundamental nature of 0 exerts its influence. 0, by definition, is the concept of nothingness, a void in the numerical value. A fundamental property of 0 is that any number multiplied by it results in 0. No matter how large or complex the number, the product vanishes into the void. Therefore, there is no number that can be multiplied by zero to produce 10. The equation searches for an answer that does not exist, leaving us with a logical silence. This is not a mistake in the machinery of mathematics, but rather a definition of its edges. When mathematicians state that division by zero is undefined, they are acknowledging a place where the standard path no longer leads forward. It is a pause in the logic. If one were to allow such a division, the stability of other mathematical truths would begin to drift. We can also view this through the lens of repeated subtraction, which is another way to conceptualize division. To divide 10 by 2 is to ask how many times one can subtract 2 from 10 until nothing remains. We subtract 2, then 2 again, and after 5 gentle subtractions, we reach 0. The process is finite and resolved. However, if we attempt to divide 10 by 0, we are asking how many times we can subtract nothing from 10. We can subtract 0 once, twice, or 1,000 times, and the original 10 remains untouched, resting exactly where it began. The process would continue forever, never making progress, never resolving. It is an infinite loop of stillness. There is a subtle variation to this boundary, found in the unique case of dividing zero by itself. If we ask what happens when zero is divided by zero, the multiplication check offers a different kind of puzzle. We are asking, what number, when multiplied by zero, equals zero? The answer, strangely, is every number. 5 times zero is zero. 100 times zero is zero. Because every number fits the criteria, the solution is not unique. It is too vast. In mathematics, this is often called indeterminate. It is a form that is too open to be useful, lacking the precision required for a definitive answer. This boundary serves a protective role. It preserves the consistency of arithmetic. By agreeing that division by zero is undefined, we maintain the integrity of every other calculation. It ensures that the rules of algebra remain robust and that the logic of equations holds true. Even as we approach this boundary without touching it, we see interesting patterns. If we divide a number by smaller and smaller fractions, approaching zero, but never quite reaching it, the result grows larger and larger. Dividing 10 by 1/10 yields 100. Dividing 10 by 1/1000th yields 10 million. As the divisor shrinks toward the infinitesimal, the quotient rises toward the infinite. Yet, the limit remains. We can get arbitrarily close, drifting nearer and nearer to that edge. But the point of zero itself remains a quiet exclusion, a place where the numbers simply do not go. The prohibition against dividing by zero is not a barrier of fear, but a boundary of definition. It is a necessary silence that allows the rest of the number system to speak clearly. It reminds us that even in a world of infinite possibilities, there are logical resting places, points where the operation ceases, and we simply let the numbers be. the atoms of arithmetic, prime numbers in the vast and orderly landscape of integers, there exists a specific class of numbers that serve as the foundation for all others. These are the prime numbers, the indivisible entities of the mathematical world. While we often think of numbers simply as tools for counting or measuring, number theory invites us to look closer at the personalities of the numbers themselves. Within this quiet observation, we discover that certain numbers possess a unique structural integrity. They cannot be broken down into smaller whole number parts. They stand alone, divisible only by themselves and the number one. To understand the serene nature of a prime number, it helps to first look at numbers that are not prime. These are called composite numbers. A composite number is like a structure built from smaller bricks. Take the number 12, for instance. It is a solid, useful number, yet it is constructed from others. You can arrive at 12 by multiplying 2 and 6, or 3 and 4. If you break it down to its absolute basics, 12 is simply 2 times 2 times 3. It is a composition, a gathering of smaller values. A prime number, however, resists this kind of deconstruction. Consider the number 13. There are no two smaller whole numbers that can be multiplied together to create 13. It cannot be arranged into a neat rectangle of rows and columns. It can only form a single, long line. It is elemental. In this way, mathematicians often refer to prime numbers as the atoms of arithmetic. Just as the physical world is constructed from elemental atoms combining to form complex molecules, the world of integers is built from prime numbers combining to form composite numbers. Every single whole number greater than one is either a prime itself or made by multiplying primes together. This is a fundamental truth that provides a sense of deep stability to the number line. The search for these elemental numbers is an ancient pursuit, one that relies on patience and a gentle process of elimination. Over 2,000 years ago, the Greek mathematician Eratosthenes devised a simple, rhythmic method for finding primes, known today as the sieve of Eratosthenes. The method is beautifully mechanical, a process of filtering out the composites to reveal the primes hidden amongst them. Imagine a grid of numbers laid out before you, starting from 2 and continuing onward. To begin the sieve, you recognize that 2 is the first prime number. It is unique in that it is the only even prime number, a solitary figure in the sequence. Once you acknowledge the 2, you gently sweep away all of its multiples. 4, 6, 8, 10, and so on are crossed out. They are composites built with the help of the number 2, so they cannot be prime. With the even numbers cleared away, you move to the next available number, which is 3. 3 is prime. It has no factors other than itself and 1. Now you repeat the rhythm. You sweep through the list again, crossing out every multiple of 3. 6 is already gone, but now 9, 15, and 21 are removed. They are composites divisible by 3, the next available number is 5. It remains on the list, untouched by the previous sweeps, confirming its status as a prime. You then remove all multiples of 5, the 10, the 15, the 20, the 25. The sieve continues with 7, removing the 14, the 21, the 28, and the 49. As this steady process unfolds, the grid becomes emptier, leaving behind only the sturdy, indivisible numbers. 2, 3, 5, 7, 11, 13, 17, 19, 23. These numbers remain anchored in the sieve, having allowed all the divisible numbers to fall through the mesh. There is a soothing quality to the distribution of these numbers. At the beginning of the number line, primes are abundant. They appear frequently, clustering close together. 2 and 3 sit right next to each other, the only time in the entire infinite sequence that 2 primes are adjacent. 5 and 7 are separated by only a single number, as are 11 and 13. These pairs are known as twin primes, close companions in the sequence. However, as we travel further along the number line, into the hundreds, thousands, and millions, the primes become more spread out. The gaps between them widen. We must pass through long stretches of composite numbers, numbers divisible by 2, 3, 5, or others, before we encounter another prime. Yet, despite the growing distances, the primes never disappear. Euclid, another scholar of antiquity, provided a logical proof that the list of prime numbers is infinite. No matter how far you count, no matter how colossal the values become, there will always be another prime number waiting in the distance, distinct and indivisible. This sequence does not follow a simple, predictable pattern like the even numbers or the multiples of 5. There is no easy formula that tells us exactly where the next prime will fall. Instead, they appear with a complexity that has fascinated thinkers for centuries. They are the constants in the chaotic expanse of arithmetic, the unbreaking stones that pave the road to infinity. In studying them, we find a quiet assurance that the foundation of mathematics is built on elements that are simple, unique, and everlasting. The infinite circle of pi, there is a shape that appears throughout the natural world, visible in the dark center of the human eye, the cross section of a tree trunk, and the luminous disk of the full moon. The circle is a figure of perfect symmetry, a continuous loop with no beginning and no end. It is smooth, consistent, and balanced. Hidden within every perfect circle, regardless of where it is found or how large it is, lies a constant relationship, a numerical bond that never changes. This is the realm of pi, a number that has quietly fascinated thinkers for thousands of years. To understand pi, one simply needs to look at the geometry of the circle itself. If you were to measure the distance across the exact center of a circle, a line known as the diameter, and then measure the distance all the way around the outside, known as the circumference, you would discover a specific ratio. The distance around the circle is always just a little bit more than 3 times the distance across it. It does not matter if the circle is the rim of a small porcelain teacup or the equator of a giant planet. The ratio remains steady and unyielding. It is a universal constant, most commonly approximated in basic mathematics as 3/14. However, the simplicity of those first three digits belies a deep and endless complexity. Pi is what mathematicians classify as an irrational number. This means that it cannot be written as a simple fraction of two whole numbers. There are no two integers that, when divided, equal pi exactly. When expressed as a decimal, the digits of pi unfold in an infinite sequence. They continue forever without ever settling into a repeating pattern. There is no rhythm to the sequence, and no loop that allows one to predict what comes next based on what came before. It is an infinite, non-repeating stream of numbers, flowing on without a conclusion. Long before the advent of digital calculators or computers, ancient mathematicians sought to pin down this elusive value. They understood that the value was slightly more than 3, but the exactness required patience to uncover. In ancient Greece, the great thinker Archimedes developed a gentle, methodical way to approximate the number. He did not have the tools to measure the curve directly with perfect precision, so he used straight lines. Imagine a circle, and inside it, a triangle. The straight sides of the triangle do not fit the curve well. Then, imagine a square, then a pentagon, and a hexagon. As the number of sides on the shape increases, the straight edges get shorter and shorter. The shape begins to look less like a polygon and more like the circle itself. Archimedes calculated the perimeter of a polygon with 96 sides, drawing closer and closer to the true curve, narrowing the range in which pi could exist. This method, often called the method of exhaustion, was not a struggle, but a gradual approach toward accuracy, filling the space with increasing precision. For centuries, this number was simply described by its geometric property. It was not until the early 18th century that the Welsh mathematician William Jones introduced the Greek letter dollar, pi dollar, to represent it, a notation later popularized by the Swiss mathematician Leonhard Euler. This simple symbol provided a shorthand for a concept that is, by its nature, impossible to write out fully. It allowed equations to remain tidy and elegant, holding the place for the infinite expansion of digits. The pursuit of pi's digits became a quiet pastime for many throughout history. In the 16th century, a mathematician named Ludolf van Suylen spent a large portion of his life calculating just 35 decimal places. It was a slow, patient process of hand calculation, a testament to human curiosity and persistence. Today, the calculation has moved from paper to silicon. Modern supercomputers have calculated pi to trillions of digits. These machines hum along, generating pages upon pages of numbers. Despite this massive volume of information, the nature of the number remains the same. We know more of the sequence, but the sequence itself has no end to reach. Pi is also known as a transcendental number. This classification means it is not the solution to any simple algebraic equation with integer coefficients. It exists somewhat outside the standard framework of algebra, distinct and unique. Within the endless string of digits, there is a fascinating statistical property that mathematicians believe to be true, though it is hard to prove. The numbers 0 through 9 appear to occur with equal frequency over the long run. If you were to look at a sequence of billions of digits, you would likely find no bias toward any particular number. The sequence appears perfectly random, yet it is completely determined by the fixed geometry of the circle. This number is woven into the fabric of the physical universe. It appears in the physics of gentle waves, the spiral of a seashell, and the winding path of a river. It is a constant companion in the study of the natural world. From the rough approximations of the ancients to the trillions of digits known today, pi remains a beautiful, infinite constant, a reminder of the elegance found in the relationship between a line and a curve. Imaginary numbers and the complex plane for centuries, the number line was perceived as a single, straight path. It was a familiar road that stretched infinitely to the right toward positive numbers, and infinitely to the left toward negative numbers. Mathematicians could walk this line in either direction, performing addition and subtraction, or scaling their position through multiplication. However, there remained a quiet mystery, a question that the single line could not answer. This mystery arose when asking for the square root of a negative number. In the realm of ordinary arithmetic, squaring a number always results in a positive value. If you take a positive 2 and multiply it by itself, you arrive at 4. If you take a negative 2 and multiply it by itself, the two negatives cancel each other out, and you still arrive at 4. This created a gentle paradox for early scholars. There seemed to be no number on the traditional line that, when squared, could produce a negative result. For a long time, equations that required such a solution were simply set aside, labeled as impossible, or regarded as having no meaning. The resolution to this puzzle did not come from force, but from a shift in perspective. It required the invention of a new kind of number, a unit that would sit perpendicular to the reality everyone already knew. This unit is represented by the lowercase letter I. It is defined by a simple, elegant property. When you multiply I by itself, the result is negative 1. With this single definition, the barriers of algebra quietly dissolved. This new class of numbers was historically given the name imaginary numbers, a term coined by René Descartes. While the name suggests something fictitious or non-existent, these numbers are as consistent and logical as any integer or decimal. They simply exist in a different dimension relative to the numbers we use for counting apples or measuring distances. To understand them, One need only look at the number line and imagine expanding it into a vast, open field. This field is known as the complex plane. Imagine the traditional number line running horizontally from west to east. This is the real axis. Now visualize a second line running vertically from south to north, crossing the first line at zero. This is the imaginary axis. By placing these two lines together, they form a coordinate system, a flat surface extending in all directions. Every point on this plane represents a complex number. A complex number is a blend of the real and the imaginary. It describes a specific location on this two-dimensional map. For instance, a number might consist of three steps along the real axis and two steps up the imaginary axis. This combination allows mathematicians to describe points in a plane rather than just points on a line. The introduction of the complex plane turned the study of numbers from a linear journey into a spatial exploration. One of the most soothing aspects of the complex plane is how it changes our understanding of multiplication. On the traditional number line, multiplying by negative one is like flipping a switch. It jumps a number from the positive side directly to the negative side. A sudden 180-degree reversal. In the complex plane, however, the movement is more graceful. Multiplying a number by I corresponds to a 90-degree rotation. It is a quarter turn counterclockwise around the center. If you start at the number 1 on the real axis and multiply by I, you rotate 90 degrees to arrive at I on the vertical axis. Multiply by I again, and you rotate another 90 degrees to arrive at negative 1. Another multiplication rotates you to negative I, and a final multiplication brings you full circle back to positive 1. This cycle of rotation connects arithmetic to geometry in a profound and harmonious way. It reveals that the relationships between numbers are not just about quantities getting larger or smaller, but about direction, rotation, and cycles. The great mathematician Leonhard Euler was instrumental in standardizing the notation and understanding of these numbers. He saw the utility in this expanded system, recognizing that it allowed for the solution of any polynomial equation. Before the complex plane, many equations seemed to hit a dead end. With the inclusion of imaginary numbers, the system became complete. This concept is enshrined in the fundamental theorem of algebra, which essentially states that in the complex number system, every equation has a solution. There are no loose ends. By accepting the existence of the vertical axis, mathematics gained a sense of closure and symmetry. The complex plane provides a space where algebra can breathe freely, unencumbered by the limitations of the single line. It is a landscape where real numbers provide the grounding and imaginary numbers provide the lift, working together to describe the fullness of mathematical space. In this plane, every rotation is smooth, every equation finds its roots, and the number system rests in a state of perfect equilibrium. Drifting into infinity, the concept of infinity suggests a horizon that never ends, a sequence of numbers continuing softly into the distance. Just as the integers stretch on without limit, the mind now finds a vast, open space in which to settle. There is a deep comfort in knowing that mathematics requires no ending, allowing patterns to repeat in a gentle, rhythmic hum that echoes into forever. You no longer need to solve for variables or define the boundaries of the set. The rigid structures of logic remain true without your supervision, standing like silent sentinels in a quiet landscape. As the sequences fade into the abstraction of the infinite, the mental effort of calculation dissolves. Allow your thoughts to become weightless, drifting toward the peaceful void of deep slumber. The equations are balanced, the proofs are complete, and the infinite dark awaits to cradle you. Let the certainty of these truths guide you into a restful silence. Good night.